Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thanks for listening to AFR. If you want to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. I'm Tim Wildman with Ray Pritchard and Walker Wildman. We thank you for listening to the program. Ray's normally in Kansas City doing the show with us, but he's in Tupelo today, and good to have you.
Thank you, Tim. Good to be here.
Down with us. We were just checking the weather, you and I, because you got to drive home this afternoon.
That's right.
But
there's a little mess here in the Mid-South. Mm.
Yeah, I don't know if that's sleet or snow between here and Memphis and Jonesboro.
You know, in the South, we get excited about snow.
Right.
Because we don't get it.
Ray grew up in Alabama.
Right. It was a big deal. You know, two inches was a big deal growing up.
And I look at it and I'm thinking today, I wish it would stick. But the ground's
too warm.
Yeah, when you don't get very much snow, you like it.
Right.
Yeah. When you live in Minnesota, you go, I don't want it.
I'm tired of it.
I don't want to see any more snow.
It's the driving in these conditions that are dangerous because we're not really used to it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true. But it is funny. We've talked about this before. We've all known. By the way, Steve, good morning to you, bro. Steve Jordahl, I acknowledge you.
But now I feel acknowledged.
You acknowledge my brother. You're important. And you have a purpose.
And, thank you.
If Rick Warren were here, he would tell you.
The Colorado boy's laughing at you guys.
I know. I was going to say.
That's right. They're taking this very seriously.
I'm going to say, you lived in both worlds, right? You lived 20 years in Chicago.
In Chicago, right. Right.
But grew up in Alabama.
That's
so
right.
You've seen.
That was a shocking transition.
Why do they call it the Windy City?
Well, because it really is. I mean, the wind comes howling in from the northwest out of...
Off the lake?
Well, really coming from the northwest out of Saskatchewan and Alberta.
Oh my goodness.
And when it hits the city, it...
Wisconsin sends it to them.
That's right. It's a gift from our friends in Milwaukee and Madison, places north.
Okay.
It's true.
All right. Walker's right, though. To our shame, I guess, here in the Deep South, when it does snow... you get 4 inches, we're calling out the National Guard, huh?
Yeah.
They're closing Walmart.
Buying out the grocery stores.
Four inches, you don't even...
That's a blizzard.
No, you don't. Yeah, I know. But 4 inches in Chicago, you don't even...
It doesn't even count.
It's a dusting.
Yeah. That's right.
We got a dusting of snow today.
That's right. An additional
4 inches. I never will forget, Steve, you've seen how quickly you can clean up snow in the earth. In Colorado Springs, right?
Yeah, there was a saying my kids had. If it starts snowing after midnight, then you're probably going to get a snow day. But if it starts snowing before midnight, they'll have the roads clean by the morning.
Well, when I was a kid, I don't know, sixth or seventh grade, I took a chance. they said snow was coming.
Okay.
And I decided, why do I want to study for the test? We're going to have snows coming, right?
I agree.
Well,
that makes sense.
Problem was, I woke up the next day and I see green grass or grass out there. And I was getting down. I knew.
You're in New York,
boy, had I made a mistake. Either I got to go to school and take a chance on this or try to somehow fake a sickness.
Right.
And I wasn't very good at that.
Yeah, that never worked out.
Nah, they didn't work out. Your mom, dad know.
They know.
Especially your mom.
Ferris Bueller just wasn't realistic, was it?
That's right. That's right.
Oh, man. All right, Steve, good morning to you, brother, and what's happening?
Well, I know you guys heard from the Democrats announcing the articles of impeachment. While you guys were on the air, the Republicans came out and had their say. This is Kevin McCarthy responding. This is Cut 16.
You know, back in 2016, the Democrats called those who supported Donald Trump deplorables. And now they're trying to disqualify their votes. Democrats still cannot get over the fact that the president won the election and they lost. Just last week at this podium, Nancy Pelosi went to point out they created a timeline to impeach President Trump that she said started 2.5 years ago. Many of you know of this timeline because once they took the majority, they had to decide who would become chairs of their committee. The impeachment committee of the judiciary, who could win? Jerry Nadler campaigned on that he would be the very strongest member to lead a potential impeachment.
The very strongest member. Jerry Nadler, he campaigned on doing this. So they're not having any of this, Republicans.
Right. So what's next?
A full House vote next week is what they're saying.
And then the Senate gets it. And Lindsey Graham, we heard yesterday, Lindsey Graham says they're not going to waste any time on it. Right. As soon as they have 51 votes, they're calling a vote and getting it done and moving on.
And moving on.
Is this guaranteed, Walker, to pass in the House?
I would say so. I don't think they would let it get this far if a floor vote were going to fail, because that would be embarrassing.
The biggest humiliation possible.
Yeah. Nancy Pelosi.
To have her own party turn her down. And the
well, it wouldn't take but about how many of them?
It'd take about 16 or 17.
And you said there's 30, 31 from Democrats in districts that Trump won. Mm-hmm. So
Nancy's too good at counting votes.
I've never heard of obstruction of Congress.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
That's a high crime and misdemeanor now. Huh? Anyway. All right, go ahead.
Well, there was a lot of fireworks yesterday. I know that they've had the announcement of the impeachment, but boy, that hearing yesterday had its share of fun. I wanted to play you a little bit. You remember you guys talked about Barry Burke. He was the witness for the Democrats who turned around and climbed up on the dais and started grilling the witnesses for the Republicans. And that didn't sit well with either Doug Collins or Matt Gaetz, the Republican from Florida. And they were looking for Adam Schiff. That's who they wanted. Listen to this exchange. This is cut number 5.
We're already not answering questions, and you are here without a pen because your chairman will not testify. That says all we need to hear. He don't even stand behind his own report, and he sends you. I hope it works out for you. I'm done. At this point, I turn it over to Ashley.
Can I respond? Are you trying to say that I what are you trying to say? What is the implication here? But by the way, I didn't give anything close to $1 million remotely, so I don't know.
The implication is we want Schiff in that chair, not you. The implication is the person that wrote the report is the person that should come and present it, and you weren't elected by anybody, and you're here giving this testimony in place of the chairman. I hope that clears up the implication.
Who is that person?
Is that Matt Gaetz?
Matt Gaetz? That was
Florida.
Good.
Yeah.
Where is he from? From Florida?
Florida.
So they were talking to the person presenting the Democrats' impeachment report?
Barry Burke.
Who was not a member of Congress.
No,
it's some lawyer they brought
attorney,
in.
Yeah.
Okay.
He didn't take too kindly to being pulled out.
And Gates' whole point was Schiff should have been the one.
Schiff should have. He wrote the report.
Right.
Deliver it.
Defend it. Yeah.
Yeah. Ain't going to happen.
We got another goodie here from coming up from our friend.
This is from Comer.
Louis Gohmert out of Texas.
Louis Gohmert, thank you.
My mind went blank.
Yeah.
Just don't tell Mr. Gohmert, Congressman Gohmert, that we got him mixed up with James Comer.
No, yeah. Right. That won't go well.
He'll never come on AFR
never.
Again. Louis Gohmert, I love Louis Gohmert.
Yeah, he's great.
Louis Gohmert from Texas was talking about how low they have brought the bar on impeachment. And he said, watch out. You get what you pay for. This is cut 15.
I mean, just think, we've had people already mention, you know, the next president, Joe Biden, we're told, you know, gee, he may be the next president. Well, we've already got the forms. All we have to do is eliminate Donald Trump's name and put Joe Biden's name in there because he's on video, he and his son. He basically has admitted to the crime that's being hoisted on the president improperly.
There you go.
I would high five Congressman Gohmert were he here right now.
Yeah.
That was classic.
Just get out your eraser, erase Trump and put in Biden.
Biden.
We're ready to go.
If it is Biden.
And you know what? We talked about this before. You know, in all seriousness, I don't know where we go from here as a country and as a two-party system here. In the coming weeks, months, and years, because the Democrats have lowered the bar for impeachment, which is supposed to be the death penalty for a president,
right.
Or the most serious crimes like President Clinton got into lying under oath.
Right.
Right. Yes, it was about sex. And some people would say a lot of people would lie under oath if it was about sex. And that may be true.
But they're not necessarily president either.
But yes, but the fact is that he was under oath.
Right,
he was under oath, and he's the chief law enforcement officer in the country.
Sure.
And then President Nixon got in trouble for covering up a crime.
Right.
Right. So he participated in covering up a crime. So they got nothing like that here on President Trump. They've so lowered the bar that
basically they're impeaching him because, one, they don't like him.
Yes.
And two, they disagree with him. Neither of those are high crimes or misdemeanors.
And they don't like what he did by asking the Ukrainian official to look into what Joe Biden did when he was vice president.
Right.
They consider that, I don't know how straight-faced they are about this, but they use that as to say he tried to curry favor with a foreign government to impact an election, which is a real stretch because Vice President Biden hadn't even announced he was going to run for president yet, number one. Number two is, since when is a vice president immune from criticism that he may have participated in corruption just because he's a candidate?
Yeah.
Right.
For office. So, but man, what is a quid pro quo now going forward? Is every president who tells a country, unless you do something, you're not getting money? Is that, can you not do that at all now? Because that is a quid pro quo. Pro quo, if that's the way you... Is that Latin or French or what is that?
This for that.
This for that.
This for that.
Which happens every day in America.
It happens every day in America.
All the time.
Especially in politics.
And presidents have done that forever, and they're going to... There's
probably no telling how many conversations President Obama's staff and he himself had with foreign leaders and ambassadors and different people where he said... You guys need to do this. You need to fix this, change this.
We're going
to
need your help.
Yeah, and then we'll get you your aid.
That's right.
We're going to send the billions of dollars in cash on pallets to you.
Yeah, to Iran.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
You release our prisoners and sign the new deal.
How about this? The President of the United States, Barack Obama, is talking to the second-in-command in Russia at an event. You remember this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're having an off-mic conversation, what he thought was an off-mic conversation. And Barack Obama, the President of the United States, says to the number two guy in Russia, go tell Vladimir that I'll get back to him on negotiating down missiles. All right? Nuclear missiles, right? But I can't do that right now because it'll hurt me politically back home. Wink, wink.
Right.
So... But what I'm saying is that was a form of a this for that.
Hmm.
You wait, tell him once I'm reelected, then I can't be held accountable with the American people anymore in an election.
And the truth is,
what is that?
I mean, that's a quid pro quo.
Is it impeachable?
Well, by the
Democrats' definition, it would be.
Sure.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But I do think it's a dangerous precedent. I think Nancy Pelosi, to her credit, and I rarely say that, held off the far left of her party in doing this for probably a year or two, because she saw it as politically unwise for her party in the long run, and I think she was correct about that. Time will tell. The time being next November,
right?
But we will see. But I think Nancy Pelosi's original instincts were correct, and I would guess if she had to be. The reason she's a little testy right now, as we've seen in some of her public comments and public interviews, is because this is not going like they intended it to go. They thought that they would get the American people on their side and Donald Trump would be taken out of the White House in handcuffs.
Her initial approach back when, in the beginning, was we should not go down this impeachment road. And now she's stuck, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. I think she would view it like this. We'll have a, quote, impeachment vote, and it'll come up in November of 2020 when the American public goes to reelect or not reelect Donald Trump as their president.
It's interesting to hear the way that the Democrats are talking about this. Nancy Pelosi, when she opened this press conference, when they announced the charges, said it was a somber day. They're just taking this so seriously. In fact, I want you to hear a little bit of that. This is cut 7, and then you're going to hear a CNN contributor, of all people, Philip Mudd, who has a little bit different take on all that. This is cut 7.
On this solemn day, I recall that the first order of business for members of Congress is the solemn act to take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States.
When you're Adam Schiff and you finish hearings and people give you a standing ovation in the Democratic caucus for a hearing, I got to step back and say, Nancy Pelosi wants me to say the caucus is somber about this. A standing ovation for this process is completely unacceptable.
There you go. Do you remember after that hearing?
Right.
She's stuck.
Yeah.
She is stuck. She's got the left part of her
party. It's too late now. There's no going back. They've got to go to a vote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's going to go nowhere in the Senate, and I think it will hurt the Democrats come November.
And those who are running for the White House on the Democrat side, who are themselves United States senators, are probably going to be glad that they won't say this out loud. They're probably going to be glad that this is going to be over pretty quick if Lindsey Graham has his way, because they
we got the primary season coming up.
Yeah, they need January and February to get out
there. They want to get past it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's turn to social media a little bit. Twitter has suspended Fox reporter Pete Hegseth's account because he posted the manifesto of the shooter in Pensacola. You remember this guy? He's a Saudi national named Mohammed Al-Shamrani. Thank you. And
he's
killed
a jihadi.
Well, he killed 3 people and injured 12 more, and it is being looked at as a terrorist incident. And so Pete Hegseth posted the manifesto, and Twitter said, no, that's terrorist content. We're taking you down.
Wow.
Now, is that their standard policy?
Well,
he wasn't promoting terrorism. He was showing what motivated
his job to report.
Sure.
So
suspended his account, right?
They suspended his account. And they say that no user is allowed to threaten or promote terrorism. And these are the 4 different examples they give of what would be not allowed.
Twitter, this is Twitter's rules?
This is Twitter's rules. You can't engage in or promote acts on behalf of terrorists. You can't recruit for a terrorist organization.
Not doing that.
You can't provide or distribute services like financial, media, or propaganda to further a terrorist organization. They could say that was propaganda, I guess. And they can't use
not for the purposes
or symbol.
Of,
no, of
right,
course not.
Right.
But I have a feeling, could be, that Twitter doesn't like the narrative surrounding this particular shooting.
If you apply that standard that Twitter has just placed, if you apply that across the board, then any news story or news company or journalist that were to cite the motive behind the murderer, the terrorist down there in Florida, they would all be banned.
Yeah.
Everybody, if One News Now, if Fox...
Yeah.
Everybody's banned.
What this is the liberal American, and this goes true of the Western press, the European press too, for sure, but the liberal American news media, they don't like criticizing Islam because that's what the right-wingers do.
Right.
You know, so they want to say, no, this is not a problem within Islam. So how do we protect Islam if we're the American liberal news media? We don't allow it to be criticized by our own members.
Right.
Or whereas if this were a some guy from some Nazi group or some skinhead group or some Christian white nationalist group, as they would call it, then the manifesto would be certainly important to the story because it would show the motive for the killings. Where in this case, the liberal news media don't want you to know the motive for the killing, which is probably something the guy believed was in the Quran to kill the infidel.
Hmm. He didn't like the fact that the United States was involved in wars and everything in the Middle East.
Right. Because of his Islamic faith.
Right.
And again, as we've said 1,000 times, that's not you know, representative.
He doesn't speak for every Muslim.
No,
right?
No, right. No, not by any means. But at the same time, I don't know, the news media acts like we can't handle it. Like, I'm talking about the news media, those who, and Twitter, the social media platforms, acts like the American people can't differentiate between a Muslim who acts on their jihadi beliefs and a peaceful Muslim. Mm-hmm. So they just don't want to criticize. I think it's because they don't want you to ultimately look at the teachings inside Islam, which do advocate violence against non-Muslims.
Yes.
And that has to be talked about.
Right. Yeah.
They don't want to talk about that.
Do you remember what how they classified the Fort Hood shooting? Hassan, did that?
Workplace violence.
Yeah, workplace violence.
They got very creative there. Again, to my point, that was when Obama was in charge. And he, of course, he loathed the idea of criticizing Islam in any way. So when Hassan, was that his name?
Hassan.
He said, I'm killing people because my Islamic faith tells me to. Basically is what he said. Then Obama goes, no, that can't be it.
It's got to be workplace. He's upset.
Got to be workplace violence. But that happened over and over during the Obama administration. I remember when he was asked, was President Obama, he was on a trip to India, and a reporter said, what is jihad? I don't know if y'all remember seeing this press conference, and Obama goes, I don't know. There's different definitions of jihad.
You know, I really feel bad for these sailors and these military members who have to work with Muslims, work with foreign countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar or Qatar and others who their military's embedded with Muslims, some radical.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, they're all Muslim. Oh, you mean our U.S. military?
No, these other countries. They're the vast majority of their military are Muslims.
Sure. Yeah.
And our men and women get shot in these friendly fire shootings over in the Middle East and even now in Pensacola, Florida, where Saudi Arabia, their soldiers were in Pensacola for us to train them.
To fly jets that we sold them.
Yeah, and they turn around and start killing our American soldiers.
I don't know. That it's very complicated when you get into international diplomacy and you want to curry favor, you want to win hearts as they say with people maybe who would be predispositioned to be your enemy. Maybe like Saudi Arabia, even though we do trillions of dollars of business with them.
Mm-hmm.
You want peace in the region, so you want healthy relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. We seem to have that now. So, Iran, Saudi Arabia, you got the, what do you call the different sects of Islam?
Shia-Sunni
thing going on. So, Iran and Saudi Arabia, they can't stand each other.
Yeah.
Right.
So, who would you want to win in that deal? You'd want Saudi Arabia to win, right? So, maybe giving them...
Presumably.
Giving them
aid.
Yeah, right. Like I said, you can always second guess. It's kind of it is complicated. But when I first heard that, I'm going, what in the world are we doing training foreigners to fly our military jets? Mm. We could be turning around fighting them one day.
Right.
Right?
Just like Al-Qaeda.
Huh? Well,
we sold our arms.
We didn't train Al Qaeda, did we?
Yeah, we built Al Qaeda to fight other Muslims,
terrorists.
Back in the day.
In the day when Russia was in Afghanistan.
I'm sorry, I see what you're saying, but we didn't train Al Qaeda fighters. I mean,
not
pilots.
Directly.
Not consciously.
No, not pilots.
Right.
I'm glad we've only got 20 seconds to clear that up here. Maybe we can do that another time. Thank you, Walker.
Yes, sir.
Ray, Steve.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
My thanks to Brent Creeley for running the control board for us today, and thank you for listening to AFR. Stay tuned. Dr. Alistair Begg is straight ahead with some excellent Bible teaching, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.